I'd like for us to think tonight about Veterans Day as a three-dimensional observance. In one dimension, we look to the past, remembering veterans, famous and lesser known, who've served in war and peace. My Uncle Pete, great uncle actually, served in the Big Red One in World War II. He was part of the early movement of American soldiers to the concentration camps in Europe. I also think about my father. He served during the Korean War. He tells me the story that after he had finished his basic training, you were either going to go to Fort Sill to work with the artillery, or you were going to Korea. And the way they made that selection was a remarkably sophisticated system. They basically had you in a line and they said, Fort Sill, Korea, Fort Sill, Korea. Dad got Fort Sill. In another dimension, we pause to honor those among us who have worn our nation's uniform, our co-workers, our friends, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles. They were drafted, they were voluntold, or they volunteered to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. So on Veterans Day, we look back to remember, we look around to honor, but we also need to look forward. We need to look forward and wonder. Wonder who will be our veterans in the years to come. And more importantly, how will we mold and shape those veterans of tomorrow? Now, in one sense, we will mold and shape our veterans as we always have. Basic training, our service academies, and ROTC. And I'm confident those training platforms will adapt so that the soldiers, the sailors, the airmen, the Marines, the Coast Guardsmen, they mold and shape, will be ready to fight for the when their time comes in their generation. And I've seen that adaptation in my own chaplain corps. Now, Chaplain Pierce, when did you go to chaplain school? 2016, a recent graduate. I graduated from chaplain school in 1991. In 1991, the Army Chaplain School was a gentleman's and a gentlewoman's course. We went to class, we did some PT, and we spent, I think, one night out in the woods. Serving as the senior chaplain for Florida, I know that the chaplain training that Chaplain Pierce and others have received in more recent years is much more rigorous, and it meets the standards for chaplains that we need in the Army now. But as importantly as that formal training is, that's not what I really wonder about. When I wonder about molding and shaping the veterans of tomorrow, I wonder if we will have young men and young women with an affinity, an interest, and a desire to serve in our military. I wonder how we, and I do mean we, will mold and shape young men and women who will want to be trained in basic training, our service academies, or ROTC. Several years ago, I began wondering and thinking through the challenges that the church faces in the 21st century here in America. And let's face it, life has changed here in America as far as church is concerned. I go back to the early 1970s, Jacksonville, Florida, and in Jacksonville politics, you needed to be the member of one or two churches to get elected to anything. It was either First Baptist downtown, or it was St. John's Episcopal Cathedral. You think about youth sports. Once again, I go back to the 70s. Sundays and Wednesdays were fenced off from all youth sports. And why was that? We were at church. And of course, the biggest question you asked on Sunday is there any gas station open where we can get some gas? Life has changed. Life has changed as far as the church is concerned. Now, to be affiliated with a particular religious fellowship, it may be good, it may be bad, it may be indifferent. Youth sports, they are 365. Sundays and Wednesdays are no longer set aside days. And as far as our business life, our commerce, it's the exception to the rule for a Chick-fil-A or a Hobby Lobby to be closed on a Sunday. And so as we think about the church, we can really say we're not in Kansas anymore. I always remind St. Mark's, we now live in Oz. And the church in Oz has to work a bit differently. But that's a separate talk. But I think it's related to what I'm talking about tonight as far as molding and shaping young men and women to be our future veterans. Because we are now in Oz as it relates to young men and young women and their affinity, their interest, their desire to be part of the military. Because the military is now one of many career choices available. Just as church on Sunday morning is one of many choices that each one of us has. So how then do we do it? How do we mold these young men and women that they might have an affinity, an interest, and a desire to be our veterans of the future? With the Trinity of body, mind, and spirit as a guide, I have a few ideas. These are broad, these are general, and these are for us. And I hope you'll think on ways you can make them more specific in your context. And so with the body in mind, year after year, fewer and fewer military age youth meet the physical requirements to enter the military because they are out of shape and overweight. Let that sink in as we wonder about the future. As screen time becomes more important than play time, I think we need to go back to General Douglas MacArthur and what he said about sports in general. On the fields of friendly strife are sown the seeds that on other days, on other fields, will bear the fruits of victory. I can only speak from my own experience for both of my children, Rebecca and Patrick. Both were active in team sports, college and in high school. And their involvement in team sports shaped who they are today. Teamwork, discipline, drive, all of that is important as we look towards the future. And we really need to think about how do we have our youth as active youth? Because active youth will be productive in our military in the future. They will be the ones who on other fields will bear the fruits of victory. Now, when I think about molding and shaping that future generation, I wonder about what they know about serving in the military. What do they know beyond TV and the movies? Right now, about 1% of our population wear the uniform of our nation. And as you sit here, and this is just for you to reflect on, how many of you know someone who serves in the military? Active, reserve, National Guard. Over the years, that number has begun to shrink. And fewer of us know someone who serves in the military or who has served in the military. And so, in a sense, this is a challenge to those who are currently serving as well as to those of us who are veterans. We need to tell our stories. We need to tell our stories to young men and to young women. We need to let them know, honestly and frankly, what it is like serving in the military. For those of you who are currently serving, you need to let them know what their options are within the military. How might they be trained? I know for us in the Army, the whole cyber world is beginning to grow. It is so important. And so for a young man or a young woman who has that computer science background, how do we let them know that that background is so valuable right now in our military? Body, mind, spirit. With that spirit in mind, I wonder if the values and principles of military life will be understood and embraced by the youth of the future. I'm not worried about our Boy Scouts, I'm not worried about our Girl Scouts, but I wonder. For those of us who have served in the Army, we know our Army values: loyalty, duty, respect, selfless service, honor, integrity, and personal courage. How do we teach that to young people today? I think it has to be more than just a classroom lecture. One way that I think can be very effective in helping young people to understand those virtues, those principles of military life, is through the movies. Think about movies like Star Wars, like Harry Potter, or the Toy Story collections. All of them show, in different ways, those military values and principles. One movie of mine that's a particular favorite that I find very helpful in working with young people is the Disney movie Remember the Titans. It's set in 1971, and it was set at T.C. Williams High School in Alexandria, Virginia, right down the street from where Russell and I were in seminary. 1971, they were integrating the schools in Virginia. They were integrating T.C. Williams. And when you integrate a school, you also integrate the football team. The coach at T.C. Williams at the time, Bill Yost, he was demoted to assistant coach. And he was replaced by an African-American coach, Herman Boone. It was difficult for that community with this forced integration. I went to school during that time. Some of you may have been in school. Some of you may have been parents shepherding your children through that time. And as the movie unfolds, we learn, first of all, that Coach Yost has been nominated for the Virginia Coaches Hall of Fame. And we also learn that for Coach Boone to lose one game, he is out of a job. Coach Boone out of a job, Coach Yost back in, Coach Yost elected to the Hall of Fame. Coach Yost hears about this and he's not quite sure how that's going to unfold. Because this was a remarkably good football team. How could they lose a game? Well, in their next game, the Zebras came into play, the referees. And as it shows in the movie, after every play, there is yellow laundry, flags on the field against T.C. Williams, against the Titans. And Coach Yost sees this all unfolding before him. And you can see in his mind's eye, he's thinking through, what do I do here? He had a decision to make. He could let the game continue as it would with a loss for T.C. Williams, a loss for the Titans, the firing of Coach Boone, his replacement back as head coach, or he could take action, which is what he does in the movie. And he goes out and he stares down the referees and tells them to call it straight, which they do. The Titans win the game, and after the game, the committee that had nominated him came and let him know that he would not be elected to the Coaches Hall of Fame. This one scene within the movie, for me, it's demonstrating loyalty. Coach Yost demonstrating loyalty to his team. It's demonstrating selfless sacrifice because he gave up a remarkable reward. It's also demonstrating personal courage because he had to have the courage to change how that game was unfolding. And so I think for developing the spirit of our young men and women, helping them to understand the virtues, the principles, the values of military life, I think movies can be so helpful for that, where they can see it unfolding, and then as parents, as grandparents, as coaches, as teachers, as aunts, uncles, we can sit with them and talk through the movie, help them understand how this movie's unfolding and what they can learn. It was in 1984. President Reagan was at a D-Day ceremony, anniversary of D-Day, and he was quoting from James Michener's book, The Bridges at Toko Rhee. It was about U.S. naval aviators during the Korean War. And in the book, someone asked, why is America lucky enough to have such men? They leave this tiny ship and fly against the enemy. Then they must seek the ship lost somewhere on the sea. And when they find it, they have to land upon its pitching deck. Where did we get such men? President Reagan wondered that as he thought about D-Day and as he thought about our veterans in general. And President Reagan asked, where do we get such men? Well, we get them from Iowa farms and Texas ranches, from New England fishing fleets to Silicon Valley, from Wall Street to Bourbon Street, from Kentucky bluegrass to Florida's Everglades, from Arizona deserts to Hawaiian rainforests. We get them from America. Yes, we get our servicemen and women, we get our future veterans from America. And as we have so many times before, we will look to young men and young women throughout America to carry the baton of military service. And as we look to the future, to a future generation of veterans, as we consider how those veterans were molded and shaped, may we do our part today to mold and shape those veterans so they are ready to answer that question.